Hello and welcome to the Airline Weekly Lounge. I'm your host, Gordon Smith. And this week, I'm joined by co-host Jay Shabbitt for a very special episode as we hear from the Ryanair Group CEO, Michael O'Leary. Hey, Jay, how's it going?
Oh, very well, Gordon. How about you?
Doing very, very well. I am back in my base this week. Last time we were speaking, I was in Brussels for the Airlines for Europe Summit. And I think it was the night before. That's right. It was the night before the event. And we were speculating about what may or may not take place there. But it was a great gathering. It was a real who's who of European airline leaders. The head of Lufthansa Group, IAG, EasyJet. And there was also some Irish low-cost airline guy who you might have heard of.
Who might that be?
It was a one Michael O'Leary. Is that a name ring a bell on your side?
I've heard the name.
Even on your side of the Atlantic, he has been making waves. But yeah, he was able to take some time out of his very busy schedule insulting just about everyone at the conference to have a sit-down chat with myself and speak to our good Airline Weekly listeners. And it was, I don't think I'll be able to play the unedited interview, not even to my mother, never mind our global listeners, but it was a real treat to be able to get an opportunity to sit one-on-one and ask one of the biggest names, if not the biggest characters in the airline industry, really anything. He really is able to field any question you like. And on one hand, you think, oh, his poor comms person, you know, the PR running around, because he just finished with Richard Quest of CNN doing a one-on-one before me. He came through. It was all very pleasant handshakes and so on. And I naively expected the comms person to be furiously writing into the notebook and sort of worried about what he might say and might not say. But it was, very much a hands-off approach.
Yes, and he did not disappoint as far as being interesting.
Yeah. We covered quite a lot in a relatively short space of time, and I'm delighted to say that we are able to share some of the highlights with our Airline Weekly podcast listeners this week. And yeah, let's kick off, Jane. This is an interesting one. I started by asking O'Leary if being nicer to customers costs the airline more money overall. The context being that about 10 years ago, he said he was going to stop doing things that needlessly annoyed the passengers and didn't really benefit the bottom line. Let's listen to what he had to say.
I don't think so, but I would say that there are areas where we still fight with passengers. We still have passengers, many of them who come to us now who haven't checked in online before they get to the airport. Most of them are victims of OTA pirates, and where the email reminder to check in online hasn't been passed on to them. But so we will still hold to those policies. We won't give them refunds, but ultimately we have to train our passengers to fly in a way that gives us the lowest operating costs, so we can pass those on in the form of lower airfares. But within that, we're flying a fleet of new aircraft, we have the best on-time performance, punctuality. We still get criticised in every which survey of 3,000 of them, which they're tiny 3,000 people in dentist waiting rooms. But frankly, if that's what we had to put up with, we'd be happy to take it.
So there we have it. An airline, a low-cost airline, can be a little friendlier and not necessarily take a huge hit to the bottom line. What's your impression, Jay? Has Ryanair got nicer in recent years?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's maybe a slightly less abrasive than it was in the past. And I haven't flown them in many years, so it's like I don't have firsthand experience. The only thing I just wanted to add here as a contribution is that, one thing that I think Ryanair justifiably says is in this sense, we offer very good customer service in that we are always on time. We don't cancel flights. I mean, they have a good record of that. And if you think about it, they fly mostly new planes. They fly from, a lot of their airports are, they're not flying from London Heathrow. So that helps them with their punctuality, their reliability. I think that's that's a fair point that they make that, if you're looking for, you know, reliability, punctuality, you want to get there on time, get there safely, Ryanair has a good record in that sense.
It sure does. You know, it has its critics, as many low-cost airlines do, but my impression as a European consumer, and I've used them really for as long as I've been flying on my own, and even with some smaller family trips as a teenager, they feel like they care more about customer service. I think the organization as a whole realized that, you know, we can be cheap and cheerful, but there's certain things that we simply will not compromise on, and that's obviously safety. By most metrics, one of the world's safest airlines in terms of how many passengers they've carried and how few incidents, never mind serious incidents, they have. But customer service was another key aspect, and I definitely feel as a consumer that they've upped their game a little bit in terms of their digital presence, in terms of their live web chat, in terms of not being quite as difficult to get a refund out of with the notorious, some might say, EU 261 compensation rules. I had personal experience of actually having to claim on that during the pandemic due to some cancellations, and I had a refund from Ryanair within a couple of weeks. And there's another airline who I won't name because they won't have the right to reply, but there was another airline, a rival of Ryanair's, and it took me over a year to get the equivalent refund. And that was going through all the official channels and doing everything in pretty much the exact same way. So I think people are starting to realize, yeah, Ryanair, you know, you're not going to get the bells and whistles, but they maybe ain't so bad as they used to be.
Right. And one thing, you know, being such a profitable company, they don't have to nickel and dime as far as, or not nickel and dime is the wrong word, but they don't have to, you know, they're not constantly watching their budgets to make sure that, you know, look, if they have an issue with processing, for example, the, you know, refunds or whatever, they can allocate resources to that. And obviously they'll be very strict, you know, keeping their costs lower, extremely, extremely important to them. And they kind of live like that. That's practically a religion for them. But you see what I mean? There might be some airlines that are like, we just don't have the budget to add people to, you know, in the service space. And so there's that. I remember, you know, remember when Mr. O'Leary said that people would crawl naked over broken glass to get a low fare. And I think at one point that was their attitude was like, okay, we're giving you a low fare and that's all we're giving you and everything else, you know, it's safety, of course, but that's it. And, you know, nothing, don't complain about anything else because, you know, if we spit on you when you're walking onto the aircraft, that's your problem because we're giving you a low fare. And now, as you suggested, Gordon, I think it's a little bit more, you know, there's still, O'Leary kind of has that, he retains that same persona of like, you know, the bad boy and, you know, he'll say things that sometimes don't always sound consumer friendly, but I think you're right that policy wise and, you know, in practice, they are a pretty, you know, service, much more service friendly now than they were maybe 15, 20 years ago.
Even though O'Leary is a big fan of Southwest, he is still a big fan of Southwest. He had a few constructive comments, shall we say, some tough words for Southwest's more recent business model. Let's take a listen and hear what he had to say.
Look, I think Southwest average fare in the last decade has crept up from under 100 euros a seat to $170 a seat. Like, that's not a particularly cheap airline. Like, their average fare last year was $170 a seat. Our average airfare in Europe was 44 euros a seat. So I don't think Southwest is really a low fares airline anymore. You know, the most dramatic development in air travel in the last decade has been charging for checked in bags, not because you want the revenue, but it persuades loads of people. Like, we had, prior to we started charging for checked in bags, 80% of our passengers were checking in a bag. Now it's down to 20%, which means we have far fewer check-in desks, far fewer baggage handling staff. We don't have any lost bag department anymore because there's so few bags, it's hard to lose them. And yet Southwest, you go through American airports, and people carrying on five bags, checking in five bags, the whole process is delayed, and they won't take it on. I mean, they come up with all this schlock about, you know, our passengers are our guests and you wouldn't want to charge your guests for their bags. Well, why do you charge for the seat if that's the case? Give it all away for free. So Southwest have really lost, I think, the kind of passion for low-cost, low-fare air travel. But they're still by far and away the best, the biggest low-fare airlines in the States.
So there we go. O'Leary no longer considers Southwest to be a low-fares, low-cost airline. Do you agree, Jay?
Yeah, quite the provocative comment there. I'm going to, if you'll allow me to go off on a tangent here about the topic
of
bag fees specifically. That has been a very, very big debate within airline industry circles. Is Southwest smart for not charging for bags? And this, you know, this debate, it's nothing new. It's been going on for many years. And you know, O'Leary is saying now that they're completely not justified in they should totally charge for bags. Like we do it, everybody else does it. We make a lot of money. So, you know, you can present both sides of that. Just consider this for a minute. So I was just looking, like American Airlines, this is from the US DOT, in 2022, that's the most recent data that I saw, they earned $1.4 billion just from bag fees. And that was about 3% of their total revenue. Now, Southwest in 2023, so I'm kind of jumping ahead here, their operating profits were 3% of total revenue. So now this is a very, very crude analysis or a very crude way to look at this. But, you know, technically, if they charged for bags, then they could double their operating margin. Now, you could say, well, not really, because there's cost associated with that and they wouldn't be that's all true. Like I said, very crude analysis. But there is a very strong argument to be made that they're leaving a lot of money on the table. It is so rather conspicuous that they're the only airline in the world that does this. If I may take a, you know, little trip down memory lane here or a little history. And for those of you who've read my book about the history of Delta Airlines, some of you may have read it, Glory, Lost, and Found, that I wrote with Seth Kaplan. This whole thing, this history is well laid out in there. But if you remember, it was 2008. So this was just as housing prices were running up in the U.S. and right before the fall of Lehman Brothers, which was September 2008. Well, that summer, oil prices had jumped above $100 a barrel, like considerably above $100 a barrel. And airlines in the United States were panicking. And American, if I recall correctly, if memory serves, they took the lead and said, okay, we're gonna break tradition here. We're gonna start charging for bags. And then United followed and Delta followed and others followed. At that time, Southwest did not follow. And one of the big reasons why it didn't was because it was very well protected with fuel hedges. So whereas all of the other US airlines were faced with this almost existential threat of skyrocketing fuel prices, Southwest didn't feel the pressure. So they were able to avoid that. Now, then you had this big, you know, huge recession in 2009, lingers into 2010. So you didn't see movement. Then 2010, Southwest merges with AirTran. That whole integration was very slow. It took about, you know, 3-4 years really. So, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of action during the first half of the 2010s. Then you get to 2015 and oil prices crash and they go down to, you know, $20, $30 a barrel. And again, Southwest doesn't feel this pressure to do bag fees. Now we're going to fast forward to the post-pandemic period and Southwest is underperforming, you know, maybe not its fellow low-cost carriers, but certainly American, Delta, and United. As I said, 3% margin in 2023. Even American, we've talked about their issues before, their problems. They had an 8% operating margin, so more than double what Southwest earned. And so you have to wonder, somewhere, you know, within the confines of Southwest headquarters at Dallas, does that debate still rage? You know, should we charge for bags? Now, I think only to be fair, and I'm sorry to be talking so much here, but I think only to be fair, we should present, you know, Southwest point of view. And then what they'll say is, look, Ryanair, they're flying, you know, vacationers or holidaymakers from London to, you know, people visiting the coast of Spain. They're, you know, flying people from Dublin to Lisbon and from Italy to Athens. Our traffic is completely different. We fly, you know, 100 times a day between Dallas and Houston. People are not taking bags. They're, you know, that's a big part of their network. One more anecdote I just want to share. I have a friend of mine who owns a smallish manufacturing firm down in Florida. And it's, I don't know, like 30, 40 people or whatever. And I recently had shared a meal with him, had breakfast with him a couple of weeks ago. And of course, you know, me being me, I always have to ask, oh, well, who do you fly? Probably fly for business a lot. Who do you fly? And he says, oh, I always fly Southwest because I love Southwest because we often go to trade shows, conferences, things like that. We often have to like bring a lot of stuff with us. And it's great that they don't charge for bags. So, you know, that's sort of, there's a lot of people, a lot of small business travelers in the United States that I think really appreciate that. And maybe it's true. My final point here, and then I'll keep quiet, is that when O'Leary says Southwest has become sort of a high-ish fare carrier, I don't think there's any dispute about that. Their fares are pretty high, but maybe one of the only reasons why they're able to, a big reason why they're able to charge high fares is because they have the loyalty of those people like my friend who are willing, they'll pay extra for the extra bag fees. So just to put another way, maybe they're not getting the bag fees in the form of fees, but maybe they're sort of capturing the revenue by being able to charge higher fares because of that policy, if that makes any sense, Gordon.
It really does. And we should say for some of our listeners who may be listening from further afield and aren't too familiar with the Southwest bag fees. Correct me if I'm wrong here, Jay. It's not just one free bag, it's two free check bags.
Correct.
Yeah, that's super generous. Well, we'll hear Southwest response in just a moment, give them a little bit of a right to reply. But I thought I'd be a little cheeky and ask O'Leary what his longtime legend, if you want to call him that, the late Herb Keller might say if he was still with us about Southwest's current approach. Here's what O'Leary had to say.
I think Herb would say, follow the Ryanair model. Ryanair is the way forward. If Herb was alive, they would be charging for checked-in bags. Not, again, because they want the revenue, because it gets rid of so much bags. Planes, the holds are emptier, the planes fly lighter, less fuel consumption. A huge amount of cost saving comes from charging for checked-in bags.
So there we have it. Herb, in O'Leary's view, would have already adopted the Ryanair model and would be charging for bags. Just as we promised a quick rebuttal from Southwest, a Southwest spokesperson said that, and I quote, Southwest is famous for being the pioneer of the low-cost model, and the Southwest effect, notoriously coined by the US DOT, is very much alive today with our all-in value, no change fees, no bag fees, and legendary hospitality. So there you have it, Jay. Stay with us because in part two, we're going to listen to some more insights from our interview with O'Leary. We're going to hear about social media and also what he had to say about Scott Kirby and the Max 10s. Don't go away. We'll be back after this very short break. Hello and welcome back to the Airline Weekly Lounge podcast. I'm your host, Gordon Smith. This week, I'm joined by co-host Jay Shabbat, and it's a Michael O'Leary special. Is that fair to describe it that way, Jay?
Oh, yeah. No, it's always special when you get to hear from Michael O'Leary. Like, again, as long as there's no children around, no, you know, but well, yeah, it's always special.
Our hardworking, oh, he's always hardworking every week, Jose, our producer of the podcast, we've had him cancel out a couple of the expletives. So he's been working particularly hard this week.
Yeah, that's we're putting Jose. That's overtime work for Jose this week.
We appreciate your efforts, Jose. Let's turn briefly now to social media and hear what Michael O'Leary had to say about his company's pivot to more proactive and arguably provocative social media content.
I mean, the pivot has always been, you know, we. If you look at the growth of social media from the X or from Twitter, etc., here is a way of reaching lots of people at no cost. all you have to do is make noise. I mean, I'm the original kind of one of the creators of social media. I mean, I was making noise long before there was charging for toilets, standing cabins only, like whatever. And social media just kind of accentuates that kind of nonsensical rubbish. What we did cleverly back in the day, a decade ago, was we hired a group of kids under the age of 25 and sent them forth and said, look, write whatever you want on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, on TikTok.
That was really interesting, I thought, Jay. Michael O'Leary describing himself as not being familiar with how TikTok works or Instagram works, but at the same time describing himself as one of the original creators, in effect, of social media, because he knows how to get a story and knows how to get people talking, be it stand-up seats or paying a penny to use the toilet.
Yeah, I guess he has a point. I mean, it's we're living in an age where provocation sells, and provocation is... gets your message across and gets you attention and gets you amplified by the algorithm. So I guess provocation is an asset these days, and he's a pioneer for sure.
Yeah, we didn't hear it in that particular clip, but he did reveal, and you can read more about this in the Airline Weekly issue, which will be dropping next week as we record this on Wednesday afternoon. So I'll be with you on Monday. There were only two topics that were completely off limits for his social media team. Can you guess what they might be, Jay? Two topics?
Yeah, I did listen, and let me see if I remember. One of them was for sure safety.
Oh, yes.
And remind me what the other one was.
The other one, safety, obviously, that goes back to the very start of the airline. You don't compromise on safety. You're only as good as your safety reputation. You just don't cut corners there. It would be completely counterintuitive in the long run. The other topic was a little bit more of a late entrance, if you will. And that was September 2022 when Queen Elizabeth II died.
Right.
And he usually gives carte blanche, in his words, to the social media team. Do what you want, say what you want, insult who you want. But he said, don't try and make anything funny about the Queen. Don't mention her. Just let's leave it. So there we go. Safety and the late Queen Elizabeth as two topics that even O'Leary and his social media team won't touch. But he's, like you said, Jay, at the start of our podcast today, he's no stranger to controversy, is O'Leary. And recently he's been rather critical of Scott Kirby, that's the United CEO, for saying that Boeing 737 MAX 10, which is of course yet to be certified, but United's got a load of them on order, that he was working on some alternative plans for the MAX 10 not to feature in the fleet. That might not be the aircraft not featuring in the fleet at all, ever, but simply that the timescales may be shifting. But Scott Kirby faced the wrath of O'Leary a couple of months now. This was during the Alaska fallout. I think O'Leary even called him stupid at one point. But I asked O'Leary when I sat down with him last week how many of Scott Kirby's MAX 10s he might be willing to take. Here's what he had to say.
All of them. I mean, the reality is he'll take them all himself anyway. There's no way. I don't understand why Boeing are in a hole and he's just throwing petrol on it. It made no difference to Boeing. It doesn't help Boeing's recovery to say we're going to take the MAX 10 out of our growth. Well, what are you going to grow with instead? You can't get an Airbus aircraft this side of 2030. You can get the leasing companies, but they're about twice the price, twice the market rate. So it doesn't make any sense. But, they are. Some of the American CEOs are what they are. And some of them talk a lot of rubbish.
Ouch. Pretty spicy stuff there from Michael O'Leary. And we should add that we did reach out to United for comment, and they declined to do so.
And by the way, I love the British term rubbish. I need to start incorporating that into my conversation more.
A load of rubbish. A load of rubbish. What would you call it? Trash?
Yeah, trash, I think would be right.
We've touched on this on previous podcasts, Jay. You don't think that United are actually going to cancel any of their MAX 10s. I think they said recently that they wanted Boeing to just build more of the MAX 9s until the 10s start to show up.
Right. We've talked about United's strategy. I think the MAX 10 is very important to their strategy. I to the extent that they can get A321 Neos You know, if they can get them faster than they can get the Max 10s, then, you know, perhaps they won't buy as many Max 10s. But at this point, I think it's, you know, going to be kind of on the margins because, you know, Airbus doesn't have A321neos laying around either. So it's, you know, there's just not that many to go around. There's an aircraft shortage, particularly of those two aircraft types. So it's, you know, but if you want to go long term, 10 years from now, assuming there's, you know, assuming Boeing does eventually start producing the MAX 10s, I have no doubt that United will take them and they'll like them. And that'll be that.
And we should also
and O'Leary will have his as well, and he'll be happy too.
Yeah, well, I was going to say we should also add that Ryanair has a separate order for Max 10s pending, and we were speaking to O'Leary before the huge news broke on Monday of some serious management changes at Boeing with Stan Deal, Dave Calhoun, and others leaving the company. Let's end with another little sort of a lighter one, shall we? Are you feeling lucky, Jay?
Well, I don't like to play the lottery, but it's, I suppose, in a very general sense, yes, I'm feeling lucky today.
Well, you're feeling lucky. You're recording the Airline Weekly Lounge podcast. It's your...
There we go.
Yeah. Well, again, if anyone's not flown Ryanair, let me enlighten you. For as long as I've been flying, they have been offering scratch cards on board. So a U.S. low-cost airline might offer a credit card on board or the option to apply for a credit card. Ryanair strips it right back in terms of some of their ancillaries. They get one of the cabin crew to walk down the aisle with a fan of scratch cards, and you've got the option to buy a few on board, and sometimes you win a sandwich, sometimes you can win a cash prize or be entered into a further draw for a cash prize. So I asked if people still buy these scratch cards on board. Hasn't everyone that's wanted to buy one, already bought one, and either won or not won. Here's what O'Leary had to say.
Yes, remarkably, we sell over 1 million scratch cards a year. It generates we generate about 3 or 4 million a year for charitable causes all over Europe. And, you know, I think it's for those people who want to play, it's an entertaining service. You know, I don't particularly play lotteries myself, but if you do, you do.
I find it hilarious that one of Ireland's, if not Europe's richest men, say, I don't personally play the lottery. I think most would argue that he's already won the lottery in many ways. But a really interesting insight there into some of the additional ancillary revenues that are in play at Ryanair. Anything else to add, Jay? What's your closing impression of Ryanair looking at it from the other side of the Atlantic?
Well, the only other thing I was going to say about luck is that we are talking one day before the start of baseball season. I don't know how many of our listeners, and we have kind of a global audience here, but any baseball fans out there, I'm a big Mets fan. So that, for anyone that's familiar with baseball, that sort of goes hand in hand with being unlucky. It's pretty much a torturous existence to be a Mets fan. So I guess that makes me... unlikely to play Mr. O'Leary's scratch cards here, because I don't have any luck in baseball. I probably won't have any luck with his cards. But on a more serious comment here, you asked me about Ryanair's just kind of general impression. And look, they're the most profitable airline in the world. At least, you know, they may not be exactly number one or year in, year out, but over the long haul, they're you know, year in, year out, they're always in the top three or four, and incredible business model. They're, you know, we can talk at length about why they're so profitable, but just, you can start with their very advantageous orders, their aircraft orders with Boeing. That's a very big part of it. Well, one of the reasons why O'Leary is able to get away with being so, trying to think of the right word, profane, provocative,
cheeky.
Rude, cheeky. You can go down a long list of adjectives. One of the reasons why he's able to get away with it where others might not is simply because Ryanair is so important to the economies of a lot of European countries. I mean, if you think of a lot of European cities, small towns even, you know, if you think of where some of these airports would be and the tourists the tourist industries of some of these places in Europe would be without Ryanair. You start to understand why he just exercises so much influence. And if you look at all the planes that he has in order, how much, you know, growth there is in the future for a continent whose economy, frankly, is, you know, struggles with growth and, you know, and is very, if you look at, you know, a lot of European, think about an economy like Spain or Italy, which is heavily dependent on tourism. You know, just, I don't know, what is Spain, 10% of tourism is, you know, 10% of GDP. So you can see why it's a very, very important company for Europe. And I don't really see that changing in the near future. It's, you know, I think it's all you know, full speed ahead on Ryanair.
Really appreciate your slightly external insights from the other side of the pond there, Jay. And my thanks go as well to Michael O'Leary himself for taking the time out of his schedule to speak to Airline Weekly and Skift. And don't forget, you can always contact us via email. My address is gs@skift.com. That's G for Gordon, S for Smith. And Jay is available at js@skift.com. That's J for Jay and S for Shabbat. My thanks to Jay for joining me this week and wherever you are in the world. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Bye for now.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of the Airline Weekly Lounge podcast. Check out airlineweekly.com for a new issue every Monday and updates on the latest airline news throughout the week.